Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Alley, just Matt Weber on the board. SP futures up 21, NASDAQ futures up 73, Dow futures up 162 as we continue to party. Boy, we gotta be, I'll have to look, but how many points we are off the low from Monday night is really unreal. I mean, the party is going on here, Kevin, and it keeps getting hotter, and we're not
Did we get invited?
I guess. I mean, I'm probably is in the market for my people that I do stuff with at certainly at other places than I've ever been. I mean, I've got put snugged up, but it really is a dramatic difference in how things are behaving. I mean, some of the stocks that and you were talking last night or on the way in, man, in your opinion, nobody uses Chat anymore. Of course, that could be like Yogi Berra. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. But
when I say nobody, I'm talking the hip new trend of the young people is not Snapchat anymore.
Well, they've got
doesn't mean no one uses it, but just like it doesn't mean no one uses Facebook anymore. But I can tell you, the under 25 crowd is not using Facebook.
They are the absolute darlings of everybody on TV, because especially since the government's always messing with them. You get this incredible. It's stunning. Hey, Kevin, how are you? I'm off here. I'm off here on a tangent.
Told you to buy the dip.
Yeah, buy the dip. I used to know a guy named Dip. Anyway, it was his acronym.
Oh, I know what his nickname was.
Gee, really? anyway, but it's really bizarre, especially if you listen to it. You shouldn't be talking about individual people, but you listen to Kramer, and. It is.
I don't. But well, go ahead.
But it's astounding if you watch. If you look with a, shall we say, a jaundiced view. How's that for a term? They really have wandered over into the idea that it's not news anymore. I mean, it's not like they don't put news out. I mean, I read them all the time. But it's not news at that level, because they're so hung up on getting the CEOs in for interviews, and they're so hung up on. The advertisement and those kinds of things, they become the fountain, the spokes station for business.
Yeah, it's operations. It's a business model, and they exist to keep the show moving, keep it keep a pace, vary things. And the only way they do that is by getting the guests to come on one after another, and the guests won't come on if you don't be nice to them.
Well, yeah, and Kramer absolutely went off on some. It was a Morgan Stanley analyst that put a sell on some company, and he was just going berserk about how the CEO is the nicest, most talented guy, and blah blah blah. And he just had him on his show, and this person to me goes, "It's almost criminal that they could put this sell on this place." Really? I mean, today I've got Snapchat up $11 last night. Right? I think their earnings. I'm going to look right here exactly. I think they might have made a penny instead of losing 10 or something. As of these guys have the amount of shares outstanding is $1.57 billion times 73. So does anybody really think that this company is worth $140 billion? I mean, they make no dough. I mean, I'm not telling you. I absolutely will not tell you to sell or anything like that. But what are we doing here, Kevin? I mean, this is 1999 all over again. mean, okay, I like the company. Why not make it worth $1 trillion or $2 trillion? Where the point of it is if there's enough money in the system, someday it will be trading $1 trillion or $2 trillion. What's the difference? If we quadruple the amount of money we have, one just shifts to the other. They had one guy who will never be invited back. They had a former head of Wells Fargo. I don't know how long ago former. I didn't really recognize the guy. And they asked him if he thought inflation was transitory, and he goes, "What do you mean transitory?" He goes, "M2 was up 20% last year. It's not transitory. It's going to get worse." it was a combination of what was the show where they used to give you the hook? That wasn't the Gong Show, was it?
Yeah, the Gong Show. Yeah, they had a hook in there, I think.
I thought they had the buzzer. I don't know. They had the hook.
A number of things. Oh, no, they had the gong.
Yeah, they had the gong.
They'd come out and swing the mallet at the gong, and when the gong sounded, you were done.
Yeah, hence the name The Gong Show. But what was the one where he had the hook? It was like the cartoon show or something?
I don't know. It's an old vaudeville thing.
Yeah, they give him the big hook, grab you, off you go.
Yeah, if you had like a bad comedy act, out would come this big hook to pull you off the stage.
Again, we don't want to, we all kinds of other stuff to talk about, but I was telling Maddie on the way in this will be something he can remember for his whole lifetime. I hope he lives to 200. And that the idea that the government, in the midst of telling everybody how great everything is pouring money in like if we just got attacked by the Germans. I mean, there is no consistency between what they're saying and what they're doing. None whatsoever. And oh, by the way, we just walked by there. Talk about the homeless situation. There's a closed restaurant down the block here where we are. This is downtown, right? And there's been a guy who set up a condo there. Right. Well, now he's got three pals because there's actually some room. And it's one of those places where there used to be an outside eating area with the wrought iron fence. Well, they've essentially taken the inside of the wrought iron fence as their turf, which, you know, hey, everybody's got to be someplace. But what do you say the average age is, Manny? 25, 30?
Surprisingly young, yes.
And so with these billions and, well, why even go there? Trillions of dollars we're putting out there. How the hell can't we get down to a level to where a van pulls up and says, "Hey, guys, we got a section of the forest reserve that needs cleaning. How about $12 an hour? Let's go." I mean, and by the way, there's a shower out there. By the way, there's a hot meal. I mean, Kevin, does any of this reach anywhere it's supposed to go?
Tom, you tend to dismiss the amount of competition to salaries, competition to payroll that the government has put into the market, and really, it's no different than the amount of money supply that they put into the job market. It's not any different in concept. It may be to degrees, but it's not different in concept and impact to what they've done with the money supply in the stock market.
Well,
so it, you know, it yeah. isn't just a matter of, well, let's pay them more. It's you have people making, and I'm not necessarily talking about the homeless, although I don't know what the circumstances of the people are. What we've known in the past with homeless is a lot of it's mental illness because they got no place else to be, and a fair amount of it is drug addiction. In fact, I think the number one was drug addiction that had people homeless. But aside from that, you know, when it comes to the truck pulling up and saying, "I'll pay you 12, well, you know, if the government's paying 12 or if the government's paying 15, then why would anybody go to work for 12 or even 15? And even if the offer then is, okay, I'll pay you 17 then to beat the government's 15, well, what you're really saying is come to work for $2 an hour extra. And so the rational decision is no.
Well, I'm trying to, again, what you say is not what people hear. My point is, when do all these trillion-dollar programs make it down to a level to where somebody shows up and helps these guys? Is really my question. Whether it's a drug and addiction program, whether it's some kind of mental illness, whether it's any kind of thing, when does it actually reach the person? I mean, I'm old enough to remember Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. Everybody got their finger in that pie except the poor people,
right? And same as it ever was.
But that's I guess somewhere I'd like to break that chain.
This is yet another argument for less government because it doesn't do this kind of stuff well.
It's like my argument with the. I mean, if you ever want to get in the South Side, get an argument where you got no chance of winning, is when you talk about the policing today's. It's the same. Everything's the same. I guess it's my theme of my feeble brain here. Everything's the same subject. You talk about the police. Well, you know, all they do is get sued. They're not going to make a stop. You know, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's watching them. They're going to get... Okay. I get it. I try and get how hard that job is. But don't insult me by showing up to work, hiding all day, and having me pay you. At least have the decency to stay home and not get paid if you're not going to do it. I mean, I can't help how difficult all this is becoming to people, but I'm saying if we're going to pass these bills where everybody makes all this money, at least help the poor guy in the corner who needs it. I mean, at some level, that's what you're supposed to be doing, right?
No, that's all you're supposed to be doing.
But I mean, it never quite makes it down there. I mean, look at the problems they have in San Francisco. Allegedly. I mean, here the problems are pretty bad, I guess, out there because the weather's nicer, it's worse. But, I mean, the problems continue to grow. I mean, we had I finally found a criticism for my Hey Jackass page. These guys foolishly think that if they just list all the murders Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that somehow or another they're going to catch most of them. Well, Maddie, was it Wednesday? We had something like 3 shootings in a 4 or 5 hour period. Of over 6 people. One of them was 10 in a tour bus. Kevin, what the bleep? What are we doing here? Or what aren't we doing?
Oh, hey, you know what? Keep arresting people, let them out with no bond very quickly, and wonder why your crime rate is high. Gee, maybe it's because we keep releasing the criminals.
We're not even arresting them.
It's called the Butterfield effect, by the way.
I don't think that's the issue because we don't even arrest them. 90% of them are not even arrested.
Well, that's another problem because, because again, should cops be abusive? Of course not. Do they step out of line? Yes, they do. However, if you tie their hands completely as a result of that, then they aren't, policing is going to suck. Well, but aside from that, you still have the issue of you keep letting people out, you go with no bail. Look at New York City. New York went with its no bail in so many cases, and look what happened there. It's just gone off the deep end. Well, so these are all predictable outcomes, by the way, and yet we do it anyway, and we've dabbled in this in the past and had the same outcome, and then go clean it up, and then we do it again, and surprise, get the same outcome again. We're not stupid, we're serially stupid.
I would say that's probably true, collectively. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, or something like that?
Hey, a lot of people, I'm not arguing that the intentions aren't generally good, but...
Well, there has to be, when it comes to bail... There has to be a better way. I mean, you can't have, Matty Weber get pinched, which he'd never get pinched for anything, but say he did, for slugging somebody in a traffic accident, which the other guy probably deserved. You can't have me showing up with $500 and getting him out and some other guy spending 6 months in there because he doesn't have the $500 for the exact same thing, Kevin.
Yeah, I understand. It's got to fit the crime, but when the solution is, okay, nobody has bail, that's a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, out of curiosity, this is probably more of a, we need to get somebody on other than just you and me. How did this whole idea of bail even start? It seems like such an odd way of doing it. If you got money, you can leave. Or I think what it comes down to is I'm going to lob this one out there. If anybody thinks I'm nuts, please tweet in or call in. I'm going to say, Kevin, is they pass the policing... For people to show up, because you essentially have to go get a loan from a knee breaker, they pass the policing of you showing up for court over to the bail bondsman and figure those guys will do the policing for them.
Yeah, and they're pretty good at it.
Yeah. It's kind of pushing the thing all the way down the track. Hey, did you see about shifting gears, the high school kid, of course, now I forget his name, was in the Tribune yesterday. They got some big marketing deal ready. So there's some high school basketball.
No, I didn't see it. What'd you get?
Well, somebody signed him up, and he's gonna make millions, allegedly. I'll see if I can dig their name up. Maybe probably find it before I can. It was in the Tribune yesterday. What the hell was it? But he's gonna make millions. So, where is it? Anyway, but you know, I wonder how much, how quickly, Kevin, we're gonna get to the point where, I mean, I guess people become impervious to marketing at some point. And what, you know, what point, you know, do we get there? Or do I know everybody's got a different spot. I for one, am sort of totally impervious to it in a lot of areas. But do you get to the point where you're the NASCAR driver and he's got 100 patches on him and nobody can even read one of them or doesn't read one of them? I mean, are we getting to that stage? Or, I don't, you know, I watched the gentleman, I keep forgetting his name, the guy who won the British Open, the Open. And now golf has gotten to the point where, well, it used to be what you could wear one logo under hat, and then it was one on the hat, one on the shirt. Now it's, I think you can do one on the shirt, one on each lapel, one on the back of the lapel, and I believe it's one on the front of the hat and one on the back. Is that where I'm at?
Don't forget the shoes.
There's no Nike. There's nothing on the shoe, is there?
Logos.
Really? But I mean, how do you? I don't see those. I mean, in an interview, you don't see those. But I'm saying we're 2 years
not
away.
Unless the guy sits back and puts his feet up on the table,
which wouldn't surprise me. But
when we see that happen, we'll know.
But I could never. When I was chairman of the marketing committee at the SIBO, which didn't make me a marketing genius. That was not where my degree was in or anything. But I often really kind of wondered, because Chuck Henry, who was the president of the CBOE and one of the nicest guys and most talented people I ever came across, I mean, he really ran. CBOE was, you know, the staff did you walk in there, Kevin, you ate off the floor. Everybody who worked there liked working there. All because, Chuck just ran a real tight ship, but a benevolent ship. He was a terrific boss to people. And, anyway, he would say, Tom, the old line is, I know I'm wasting half my money on marketing, I just can't tell you which half. And you know, there's a lot of truth to that. You wonder, Kevin, when you get down to, the example I use, the time I used to lecture a lot. You go down to Hohokam Park where the Cubs used to play spring training. Of course, now they got a bigger park. And there's probably 60 Coca-Cola signs. I mean, how can anybody at Coke tell you the word from universities on it? Here it is. I just remembered this. Can anybody tell you the marginal utility of the last sign? I mean, how can you pass
the last sign?
Yeah.
Meaning, is the 60th sign
how much
more valuable is that than the 59th?
Yeah. What do you get for putting the 60th
versus
the 59th?
10 signs versus 25 signs. Yeah.
Hey, Maddie, you obviously guys know that because you just had a group out. I'm not going to say, you know, you guys had a group out customers for dinner last night, which after 14 months or 18 months, I'm going to say was a spectacular success. But you also know you don't do it once a week. I mean,
right.
What's the right number? I mean, how do you? I mean, what do you guys normally do? Once a year? Once every half year?
I mean, for the event that we had last night is typically, I would say maybe twice a year. And frankly, it's once a year with a certain audience, pretty much. I mean, and you kind of have two audiences, I guess. But yeah, if you did that every month or every quarter, people would stop coming.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, the wife would say you're going to get drunk with Maddie Weber again.
But once a year, and then the whole reason last night I think was so successful is like you said, people were just, the energy was high because downtown was buzzing, there was a bunch of conferences in town for the first time in 18 months, the restaurants were packed, and the energy was high in a good way because I think people were just excited to be in Chicago, they're traveling from all over the country, and excited, you know, to see friends and colleagues that they haven't seen in a long time.
I think we have to keep that going. Although with the Chicago Public Schools coming out with their full mask mandate for people going back to class, no matter what age, no matter if you've been vaccinated, I think that there's a lot of pullback on this. I'm going to be a bit surprised if some of these guys start doing this mask indoors stuff again and closing places up.
Yeah, but I think this time around a lot more people are going to push back on it.
Well.
And speaking of that, Governor Pritzker is also talking about shutting down fall sports again.
Why?
As something that they have to consider, you know, probably won't do it. But that does make me ask the question: did his daughter spend her school year in Florida, where she could play all her sports?
I don't know. I wouldn't.
I didn't even know he had a daughter.
I didn't know he had a daughter. I can't imagine him having a family or a wife.
I didn't either. I just saw the question asked.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there goes a flock of geese.
I can hear them.
Yeah.
And I think they probably would really, really like to. I'm outdoors today because the geese have decided that my dock is a toilet, and I'm trying to figure out how they're getting up there so I can put a stop to it. This is very much like Bill Murray and Caddyshack.
What do you mean how they're getting up there? They fly. They can land.
No, they you know, that's a really hard landing to stick. So I have some little, you know, garden trim fence around the dock from the land, so that if they get up on the yard, they do it. And I've been coming out here early in the morning to try and catch them, and I haven't.
Are you
a couple of days early? So, you know, like I said, I'm on that Bill Murray quest.
I was going to say, what are you, the Bill Murray for geese?
Yeah, he's got the dynamite, and you can push the thing down.
Come on, little goosey.
Well, that was, for a while, if you ever played Harborside, man, there were a couple of holes that there was no place to step. I mean, it was pretty nasty, and I'm sure they cleaned it every night off the greens at least, but I don't know. Yeah. But
a couple of days earlier this week, they managed to get up there. So I have to find out how they got up there. And, you know, everybody's got the, you know, how do you keep them away? How do you keep them shoot away? My neighbors and I have tried it all, and none of it works. So, you know, I think, you know, I'm down to electrifying the dock. Can you electrify aluminum?
Yeah, I wouldn't go walking in it.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll figure it out.
There's aluminum wires.
You know, a few casualties to keep the crap off the dock. You got to balance.
What do you mean? Can you electrify? Don't you have a Notre Dame education? You know, like half the wire in the world is not copper; it's aluminum. So yeah, you can electrify aluminum very well. In fact,
cool. And do I have a Notre Dame education? Yeah, you know, in business and liberal arts courses, but no.
Well, somewhere in
hell no, I took astronomy.
Somewhere in there, there should have been a course that said, "Don't touch a live wire." One would hope.
Yeah, I get that.
God. Hey,
although I remember many a night out on the town where I definitely wanted to touch a live wire.
Oh God, yes. I in regards to the COVID thing, and I don't want to get on this road, but when you see a patchwork of lies to people. In terms of, I'll say misinformation, not lies. When people don't exactly, what is playing out right now, Kevin, to me, because I mean, thankfully a lot of listeners sent me studies and I'm, you know, I got this, whatever, I'm COVID central on some site that keeps sending me stuff. And I read, you know, half of it. When they were producing the vaccines and doing the testing for the vaccines, what is playing out now is, I mean, the new strain I didn't anticipate, but what's playing out now is exactly what these guys were, when I say these guys, what exactly the vaccine was intended to do, what it was not intended to do. It's exactly what is playing out. And when they, just real quick, when they tested the vaccines, this is repeat. This is not a measles vaccine. As a matter of fact, by a strict definition.
No, it's gene therapy.
Yeah, by a strict definition of the term vaccine, it's not even a vaccine. Okay, it's a flu shot, which there's another name for it, and I'm not the doctor, but by the way.
And it's not a traditional flu shot either. That's going to be more like when Novavax gets approved.
Well, but what my point is that when they tested it, they took 25,000 people. This is the Pfizer, Moderna, one of the two. And they gave the shot to half, and they gave placebo to the other half. And they just sent them off, okay, into the society and said, if you're sick, call us back. Basically, they did. they did, at least according to what I read, I'm not saying that somebody somewhere didn't do it, they didn't follow up and say, okay, out of this 12,500, we're going to randomly sample 500, we're going to give them a test every 2 days and find out if they ever test positive, if the virus ever enters their body. The whole purpose of it was to have these people, A, not die, and B, not get too sick. And if you could, you get to the point where even though they may have a test positive in them, there was enough immunity in their body where they wouldn't pass it on to other people. That was the goal. And that's what this vaccine is supposed to do. And yeah. I think it does.
According to a study that I just got, not doing that either, because the new variants, they're catching the new variants, generally not severely, but they're carrying them. So asymptomatically and low symptomatically, the biggest carriers now of this Delta variant are vaccinated people.
But are they, whether they're carrying them or not, are they carrying them strong enough to where they're giving it to other people is a question?
Yes.
Now, that's absolutely for sure just a couple of cases.
No, that's, I'll send you the study.
Right, because what is happening, the idea that a person who was vaccinated would never test positive never even was a goal of this, was it? It was that that person wouldn't pass it to somebody else.
90% effective. Obviously, it wasn't.
But
aside from that, Tom, here's the thing: is that sort of the lesson of this most recent variant is we're going to keep getting them. We're all still going to get exposed to this. Some people have natural immunity or have acquired immunity by getting it. Other people, seem to have some kind of T cell response that fights it off. But eventually, we're all going to be exposed to it. We're all going to get it. Strain by strain, it's going to be milder. It's going to be contagious, but it's going to be milder. And it's probably going to be seasonal based on people's living habits. Because when you're outside, you're not going to get it. You're not nearly as likely to get it as if you're inside.
So it's going to end up being
inside for the winter. You're probably, then that's the seasonality.
So it's going to be a bad flu. Yeah, just like the flu. But what I'm saying is, Kevin, the 90%, real quick, because I got a break, is out of the 500 people that came back from the studies and said, I'm sick, 450 of them were not vaccinated. 50 were vaccinated. That's where the 90% came from. It didn't come from any sort of checking people. It didn't find the Maddie Weber who was asymptomatic or me. I had a headache for like a day or two. I would never have gone to the doctor.
Well, and they didn't know who was exposed to it and who wasn't.
Right. But the point was, that's where the 90% came from.
It wasn't the typical clinical trial in that regard.
Right. It's
and,
nothing.
And, of course, the argument for it, and it's a correct argument, is you don't want to intentionally expose people to something that can make them seriously ill.
Right.
Well, from an ethical standpoint, you can't do it that way.
Well, that's why the Nazis advanced so much. They didn't care about ethics. Right. They just did it. But, I mean, it's not, that 90% is not the same kind of number that says the measles vaccine is 90% effective. It's not at all. It's not the same thing. It was based on people reporting back themselves how sick they were. It never said that they never got it. So just be aware that as we go forward, the numbers, they don't change or get any better from where they started out. But in a year, was it a really good thing to do and really help people out? Yeah. S&P futures up 17, NASDAQ futures up 52. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Low and North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Just Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 52. Dow Futures up 159. We're in Europe. We've got the DAX up 142. That's 9.9%. FTSE up 56.8%. CAC around up 63. That's a full 1%. We're partying hardy. Asia. Nikkei up 159.6%. Shanghai down 24.7%. Hang Seng down 401, 1.5. And there's a reason for all that. We'll get to in a second. Yesterday we had the Dow was up 25, S&P up 9, NASDAQ up 52. So we were up, but not as strong as it looks like we're going to be today. 10-year yield up to 1.29. So marching back up here a little bit. Got down to almost 1.1, which I got to talk about a buy. And I missed that one, unfortunately. Bund up 0.01 to minus 0.40. I'm never going to used to saying minus on an interest rate. Japan, positive 0.01. UK, positive 0.60. Got oil down 23 cents, 71.68. Brent down 25 cents, 73.54. Natural gas unchanged at $4 exactly. RBOB, is at 226, down a penny. We got gold, down 10 bucks, 17.95. Silver down 20 cents, 25.17. Copper up a penny, 435. And one of these days, hopefully I'll read why gold did not go up with inflation going through the roof, but I mean, there's gotta be some reason there someplace. Maybe because I'm along in it. Bitcoin up 43 bucks to 32,381. And, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, man?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Just one crash in the area right now. That's on the Stevenson northbound side just before Central Avenue. It appears that that accident has just been cleared, but there's some resulting congestion from that. And then once you get past that, then you'll run into a slowdown on the Stevenson as you approach the Dan Ryan there due to road construction. But that's our only delayed expressway right now. Edens and Kennedy all quiet. Same for the Eisenhower. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking good. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions as well. The weather today, it's going to get hot and steamy this weekend. Hotter than it's been. Today is the start of that. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 87 today. A little bit more humidity as well. Right now it is mostly clear and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast for the next couple of days, including today. Rainy with a high of 88. Right now it is rainy, overcast, and 76 degrees. In sports, Cubs dropped 3 of 4 down in St. Louis, losing last night 3-2. White Sox were off. They're at Milwaukee tonight to take on the Brewers in some interleague action. That's a 7:10 Central Time first pitch. Diamondbacks were off yesterday as well, and they come to Wrigley this afternoon to take on the Cubs at 1:20.
Chief, they sweep the Cubs 3 games. I don't know if anybody's going to go out there. Well,
be an all-time low.
We're kind of reaching a low here and there. But, hey, Kevin, I'm going to jump you on this one. One of the reasons why the Chinese markets are down today is the Chinese have, well, the headlines are, TAL Education shares fell 51% in extended early hours trading. New Oriental Education and Technology shares dropped about 47%. Educational training institutes are banned from raising money through stock listings now, while foreign capital cannot invest. I mean, if you can't, the amount of money, where if you can't get somebody to invest in your place right now, something's really wrong with you. I mean, there is absolutely piles of cash running around trying to put it anywhere. And every time some stock goes up and people get more borrowing power and go to the bank and borrow more, the money supply goes up even more. I mean, this is an absolute, I mean, it'll be written someday that it's nothing more than a Ponzi scheme. I mean, it's incredible. It's happened before, and people love it while it's happening. But do you know any of these firms? Have you ever heard of these places?
Nope, don't know them. But, you know, all of this is, there's a lot of money looking for a place to get the big kill.
But, I mean, who are the...
Because you need the big kill in an inflationary market to do well.
May you say we got a question?
Yeah, we have a question, and it's a little bit about what you guys kind of touched on earlier, and then certainly what we talked about yesterday
about
as well.
About geese, right?
Not about electrifying docks or anything like that. But you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks, Stocks and Jocks. LaShawn writes in, question thought for you guys. Is current unemployment more structural or cyclical? Structural, meaning pandemic, tech spending on devices, jobs were automated away, software as a service, or cyclical with supply chain issues, companies waiting to rehire until more predictable workflow. He says, what do you guys think?
I think it's both of those. I also think, that if the jobless claims were up this week, and I saw some people on the, I forget which financial network, but one of the financial networks puzzling over why that would be. Yet if they had been listening to Stocks and Jocks on the day that the employment report came out, they would have noticed how Carl immediately went to the number of people with college degrees, the hundreds of thousands of people with college degrees who all of a sudden were unemployed. So I think a lot of that is. Is what we've learned over the over the course of the pandemic is that there's a lot of people who are not necessarily essential workers. They're expensive, but they're not essential workers, and we've figured out how to get by without them. I think automation has a lot to do with it. Various kinds of automation, because things like online shopping have taken a lot of jobs away from brick and mortar retailers. And that trend was happening anyway, but it accelerated over the last 18 months, and I don't know how much of it's going to go back where it came from. There are people who really like the high-touch service, and they probably will migrate back to stores at some point in time, but there's a lot of people who won't now that they're used to the convenience. So I think some of that, there's different kinds of there's different kinds of automation happening anyway. Right before the pandemic broke, we had a company over here, Lippert Components, that opened up its a new factory. They have several factories, but they opened up a new one that's basically a lights out factory. I think there's 8 people that run it, and the one it replaced had hundreds of people working there. So yeah, I think there's a lot of explanation there. But I also think a lot of it is that, we're kind of high on what we think the economy is, but I really think the amount of money we've spent has people spooked and has them very wary of really going all in on what's happening today, because they're afraid that they're going to have to cut them all come recession time. And that's where I look at what the Biden administration could have done versus what they did. What they could have done was let things come back on their own and just pat themselves on the back and take credit for it. But instead, they have dumped so much money into this that I just don't see it ending well. And I think there's a lot of people in the business world who don't see it ending well.
I think it's, I'm going to add on to what Kevin said, is we had a lot of companies. We never have come to grips, because it's not fun to do. We've never come to grips. I mean, I've been losing argument after argument. So not say losing, I just can't win. Because you're trying to get people to zero in on the entire amount of money and look at before numbers and after. I mean, when you look at even the near north side where Maddie was, and I'm going to say that Maddie's pretty perceptive, all these places are rocking. Now, is that the same as saying, let's look at every eating, drinking establishment that was open last February, and look at this, and what were the total sales on a Wednesday night? Well, February is wintertime, so maybe not as high, but what I'm saying is, versus tonight, if there's six places that are boarded up out of the 40 that used to be, if all the other 34 don't have 20% more, you're not even. I don't think we have any kind of a handle yet on how many people are actually, that did not sound good, Manny.
No, it didn't.
Oh, wow. It's either the world's biggest accident or somebody just dropped a truck from the eighth floor. God, and Kevin's worried about his geese. And I think that an awful lot of people were paid to keep people on. And all of a sudden, when they stop getting money from the government to pay them, now they look around and say, we don't need all these people. Because part of it is the automation Kevin's talking about. Part of it is I don't think there's very many, other than in a catch-up mode, I don't know that many businesses have more regular business, ongoing business, than they did a year ago February. I would doubt if anybody does, Kevin.
No, a few, but not very many.
I mean, the whole auto industry is down.
I've noticed, so this is totally anecdotal, but I've noticed a lot more construction. So maybe construction has bounced back and they have a little more business in that industry, and if they can get the people to come work there, then they're okay. And the tradespeople generally will. They'll do well. I also wouldn't diminish how goofed up the supply chains are. Just getting one out of whack takes time to recover.
Yep.
Getting a lot of interdependent supply chains out of whack is just really a long haul trip back to some kind of equilibrium. And I really think you're seeing a lot of businesses, and this is where a lot of the investment dollars are going. So we go back and start talking about automation. It isn't, they're automating jobs that have been outsourced, that have been sent overseas. The other part of it is a lot of people who were sourcing stuff in the Far East because that was the cheapest place to go are now starting to say, well, if I can source it within the boundaries of USMCA, I can get cheaper labor in Mexico. It's not as cheap as labor from Malaysia or China or wherever, but by the same token, it's more reliable. I can keep that going. So you're a lot of that when we talk about supply chains and shifting and getting back to equilibrium is because people are actually moving their sources, and that takes time to get up and running and in some kind to some level of normalcy. So it's just like you like talk about the 3D chessboard on in Star Trek, or the nine dimensional chessboard with Data, whatever. Yeah. I mean, that really is what's going on as far as supply chains, and it's it'll find its way back. It'll get to whatever normal is again, but it's going to take time.
Well, and I think that the numbers are being spoon-fed to us. The numbers aren't right, and that's why they want a 10% inflation, because you're getting a 10% increase right off the top. I mean, you can't believe Chipotle's numbers if you're trying to find out how many burritos they sold, because everything went up 10-20% at the place. So, I mean, I think you need the idea what the auto company is doing, as little as they're doing in other places. I'm going to say there's pockets where we're absolutely still in any kind of recession, Kevin. But with the catch-up work, I mean, try and find somebody to to remodel your bathroom right now. Well, good luck with that, because we got a, we got 18 months of bathrooms needing remodeling that are pent up.
Every other house or condo or apartment in my neighborhood, every other one is under construction.
Yeah.
Right now. Not to mention the streets are under construction too. So it's very loud and hard to work from home, but everyone is doing some sort of project or, you know, putting on a new deck or painting or, you know, like you said, updating the bathroom. And then there's a lot of old houses where someone bought the lot and they're tearing down the house and bulldozing it and building a brand new, you know, house or condo building. The construction is immense, and it's in my neighborhood, and I assume across the country.
But you're a way smarter man than me that says, okay, if last year would have been fine, how much of this is makeup and how much of it is new?
Yeah. I think a lot of it's makeup, but then I think a lot of it's new too.
And I think there's not enough. There's not enough.
Well, or I wouldn't necessarily call it new. I might call it different.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's a shift to something else.
When I say new, Maddie, I mean is it the deck you wanted to replace last March and couldn't? I mean, is
well,
it,
so that's a good question, and I'm seeing both of that.
I'm seeing both of that too.
Yeah, the people right next door to us put a brand new deck on that wasn't there.
Okay,
but then you're all, like you said, there's also people that are painting their metal their fence, or, you know, like you said, updating their deck or putting new boards on it or whatever.
Well,
so there's
the
a combination of both.
I mean, did the guy get the loan last February, but he's waiting for the guy to show up till now?
Well, that could be too.
I mean, I'm saying you really kind of don't know. I mean, there are industries, you can't just dismiss the literally thousands of places in the city, bars and restaurants, that are never open up again, and not counting, you know, that number versus the other people. It's like if when Caterpillar, were they the guys who bought Bucyrus, Kevin? I think they were. The big mining equipment company and everything.
I'm not sure.
But somebody did. But even in my world, in the business world, Maddie, how long does it take? I mean, you've been doing numbers here with me for how many beers. How long does it take before Caterpillar's numbers come out and nobody says, oh, by the way, they're up 30% because they bought this other huge company last year? I mean, it lasts like one quarter.
Yeah, and by the way, they did buy them back in 2010 for $7.6 billion.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden the numbers are together. But guess what? Bucyrus isn't here anymore, right? So Caterpillar, I mean, I don't know how long it should be. There should be an asterisk on Caterpillar's numbers that said, oh, by the way, they're now two companies in that one, right? I mean, all these. I mean, did anybody know that Janssen? Who's the guy bought? Who bought Upjohn and all these other places? All these drug companies. Nobody ever says, "Oh, Merck's numbers are here." But oh, by the way, they now include these other places that used to be household names. You drop all that, right? Because you want. I mean, I'm not saying that you should continue to inundate people with all these numbers that only I care about. But the point being is, you can't, if you're going to give a story now of the how good Ditka's is doing, okay, somewhere in there is some number that, gee, Ditka's got, you know, somewhere between $1 and $2 million from the government, and oh, by the way, three other steakhouses are done, like Martin's, like Ruth Chris's. Well, now are they doing better than if Morton's and Ruth Chris's were still open? That's really the question, Manny, and I don't know the answer. I don't think anybody does, and we're certainly not going to, because nobody cares what the answer is, except maybe me. Right? I mean, I don't know. There's a way long-winded answer for this guy's question. But you think we answered him, Maddie? We don't know? Is that the answer?
A little bit of both.
So never mind. We have no idea.
but it's always a combination of all this stuff, right?
Of course.
It always is that interdependencies are always important factors. And, you know, part of that lesson of the interdependencies is that when you mess up one, it's going to cascade through a lot of things.
Well, man, I'm going to say
I really do think the college educated unemployment is a big deal, and it's
sure
not
it
getting a lot of attention.
And when you hear people, you know, and again, it bothers me when people become this one percenter and they start talking like it. When people say, "Well, all these like jobs are available," what's the problem? What they're really saying is for them, the person that used to make 75 grand as a marketing person, they should go get the job for $12 an hour at Menards because they needed help at Menards last Saturday, and they don't really care about you. But the difference is, Kevin, for some reason I still care about these people. I mean, maybe that's our upbringing or what. But to me, that shift is not easy. Nor is it something that's helpful to anybody. But maybe when you ask a question like that, it's like, I mean, if I were to ask you, okay, the first time you met Jill, I mean, what attracted you? Well, it was the outfit. It was the fact that she always looks, she always looks like she washed her hair. She's always pleasant. I mean, what is it? Or is it a combination of everything? It's a combination of everything, right?
Yeah, it usually is.
And you damn well better be.
I mean, I suppose for public consumption. I suppose if somebody was walking through the bar and all of a sudden all their clothes fell off, well, you could say, well, that's the first thing I noticed. But I mean, that doesn't happen to most people. It's a lot of other stuff, right? Well, yeah, they're the only one who talked to me.
Yeah, she talked to me.
Nobody else would.
That's what did it. Yeah, nobody. Everybody else blew me off.
She's the first. I used the same stupid line all night, and finally, she's the only one who said hi back. And that could be, it could be any one of those things, right, Manny? But by and large, it's the same thing. And that's what I mean. That's what the part about economics is. It's so fascinating, Kevin. It is almost like a human organism. You can't put your finger on what exactly is the most important part, because if it's not all working, nothing's working right, really.
Right. I mean, now, that said, there are still some skills that are always marketable.
Oh, sure.
You know, if you can work with teams, if you can express yourself clearly, if you can do some research and come up with answers, if you can live in a this is very tied into working with teams. And being a good teammate or being a leader, if asked, but it's also being able to handle diversity and diversity in all its dimensions. You know, it's not just racial relations or gender relations. It's also age, because there's so many different age groups in the workforce, and all of those kinds of things, those softer skills. You know, I have employers telling me all the time, we need that. We can train people. We can get people up to speed on the jobs. We just need people who basically show up to work every day on time, and they can be creative and get us some ideas, run with some research when asked, and help get projects implemented. And so for me, that means that when I teach a class, that's the kind of stuff that gets integrated with the subject matter. Time after time after time. I also, a lot of it's technology, and it's the ability to live in a fast changing world in terms of technology, and that gets into the whole idea of what's Industry 4.0 and what's that going to mean.
Kevin,
there's just so much going on right now, and a lot of that is just tied to the notion that things are finding their way back, but they're not coming back the same as they were. They're coming back in whatever new is.
Kevin, what do you suppose would happen? I mean, just in terms of how, the idea how things have changed is always such a bizarre statement for anybody. But if out of the blue somebody from on high were to say to me, "Hey, Chief, you're already bitching and moaning about there's a no railroad manufacturers here in the U.S. That somehow the Chinese are making the CTA cars, which blows my mind. And now Siemens is going to be making the new Amtrak cars. Here's your chance. You got the contract. Take your supply chain buddy and whoever else off the show. We need these cars, and we're gonna get a car, two cars from you every month for the next 20 years. But we need like 200 of them right away because all of them are falling apart." Kevin, I got this question because I was reading about the Empire State Building where they gave the person the contract and the time to build the building. They had nothing started. They didn't have any drawings. They didn't have any steel going. They didn't have anything going. They didn't even have the spot excavated, and there was a building standing there. They just said, "Oh, no, you mean like start tomorrow?" And they go, "Yeah, like start tomorrow. And by the way, we need it done in 18 months." And they actually finished in 13. Where the hell would we even start, Kevin? Where would we? I mean, all those guys, if they're not dead, they're pretty close. They're the really good railroad engineers that I knew. Not that there aren't a few somewhere. They probably are. We probably have to steal them from Amtrak because they've got the rehab center down in Indiana someplace. Where would we find you know, 20 either tool and die makers or jig and fixture guys, because you don't just start welding freehand. You got to put all the parts in one spot. Somebody has to design all this stuff to assemble the sides and the bottom. How would anybody even know what air conditioner we need? I mean, there's a lot of history. How the hell would we even, are these, I mean, who do we get to teach the guys at this point? I mean, I was kind of reading about, you know, could one of the battleships ever go again? And they said absolutely could never go. A, because they're too old. B, nobody even knows how to run them. Those guys are all dead. I mean, how would we even get started? I mean, you wonder when people say,
well, some states better than others are really focusing on developing those people for those kinds of jobs, because that's, you know, that's what attracts business to your state. That's Indiana's big problem right now is not that they, you know, you had that list of the you know, the business friendly states, which was nonsensical in some ways, but I think it kind of handled Indiana very well. In that it's, you know, Indiana is very friendly to business, very open, good tax base, all that kind of stuff. The problem in Indiana right now is talent pool, and the state's very focused on that. They're, you know, they're supporting in not just education, but high demand education in high demand fields, and because that's what they want. They want to attract manufacturing companies, distribution, you know, all of those kinds of businesses, and they're very, very focused on how they go about doing it. You know, I think that's, you know, that needs to happen in more places. That, you know, it isn't, you know, just generically saying free college for people or more people should go to college or whatever it is you want to say. No, it's what should people be studying?
How do you and I
you start developing that when they're you know, in eighth grade, freshmen in high schools. You got to start exposing people to careers so they can see what's a good fit.
I'm talking about how do you and I, with this contract in our greasy palms, how do we find 10 really good railroad engineers tomorrow, 15 tool and die makers, 20 welders, so they can start teaching all the other people? How do we even do that today?
Well, I know where you can get welding. I know where you can get some of the other trades because that's in the community college system.
Okay.
Now, experienced is another issue.
That's what I'm saying. These are not easy jobs. These are not easy things to do. I mean, because we end up losing, and every one of these contracts are not done properly. I mean, there's a reason why the burn interchange is 5 years overdue. Obviously, they didn't know what they were doing, Kevin. Could that be it? I mean, I know that's, if they were in here, they would not like me saying that, but I mean, obviously,
obviously something isn't right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
what I would say, are there people, you know, what do we send people to college to learn? First of all, we have this notion that, college is for everybody. Everybody should go to college. That's a very, very pervasive mindset. And I don't know that that's true. And certainly not to study liberal arts or business necessarily. But how do you develop really good project managers, the kinds of people that you need to organize this and push it home? Whether it's a construction project or whether it's, IT development. There just aren't very many good project people out there. Is that an area where we need more focus? I would say yes. Talk to any business person you want. Ask the question: are there a lot of good ideas at your place? Yep. Do any of them ever get implemented? Nope.
Well, Kevin, have a good weekend. If the Cubs get swept by Arizona, I don't know. I might have to officially become. What did Mike Rocco decide he wanted to be? He officially became a Sox fan then once.
Yeah. Well, I look at it this way: if you're worried about the Cubs trading away everybody and looking like a AAA team, don't worry, they already look like a AAA team.
Isn't that the truth? Kevin, thank you. We'll be right back with Carl. SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ is up 53.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 408-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 20, NASDAQ futures up 50. Looks like we're going to have 4 days in a row up, and we're kind of accelerating. You know, we kind of, yesterday we were up, but we kind of toned it down a little bit. But today looks like we're re-accelerating here to somewhat. Carl, how are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. It's a good day for some coffee. And
well, it's another day.
You're headed into the weekend, so there you go.
You're fully invested in stuff like Snapchat and Twitter, so I'm sure you're having a great day.
Yeah, not in Snapchat.
Hey,
Twitter.
They made a penny. Come on, it's a celebration. It's up 15%.
You know, the marvelous thing about bubbles is that you just sit there and you kind of laugh in awe at what people are willing to pay for what they're getting.
Yeah, but I have a question for you. One of the I'll put you in. In this guy's class, my mentor when I came to the exchange floor was a gentleman named Marty O'Connell. He was he had some issues because his roommate at Notre Dame was a guy named Dick Belden, who was one of the nicest guys, one of the craziest men I've ever came across. But I used to talk to him every night, and it would make my day just talking to the guy. Because his famous line was, one night I said, Beldo, you know, something like 45 states, the highest paid person in the state's the football coach. And what do you suppose his response was?
I don't know.
What manner of moron would want to live in the other five states? what who'd want to live in a state where, like, the chief of surgery at Montana State, like, made more money than a football coach? Why would you want to live there? There's always a different way of looking at everything, right?
Yeah, there is. So there you go.
But anyway, Marty was the guy I learned all my option stuff from, and he was a guy that I think he got his business degree from the University of Chicago, his law degree from Stanford. Anyway, off the chart bright guy. And one of the when we first started, where there was a rally after I started the business, and there was this rally like from everywhere. And Marty said, you know, one of the reasons why there's a rally is because he was a money supply guy too, and he goes, there's too few stocks. There's not enough. There's too much demand for too few stocks. And at that time, I mean, a period, there wasn't a lot of them, but some of the biggest companies, General Foods and Kennecott Copper and a lot of places had all just been taken over by companies. But the companies essentially went to the bank, borrowed money, and bought the shares of some other people. So you would actually get, you know, if you were owner of General Foods, you basically got a check. So you had, if you wanted to stay in the quote, the market, you had to buy all the other stuff. So you essentially, what I'm trying to get to here is when you look at supply and demand for corn or wheat or something that it's fairly easy to understand, you have to expand that to just about everything. Labor is the same way. Marketing is the same way. But stocks are the same way. I mean, and when you look at the demand even now for Chinese stocks, nobody cares. They're just stocks. If you put your money in an index, the index buys them. They don't care. If you buy the Chinese index, they don't care if this company is, I mean, right now, I mean, if you may sit there and say, I mean, there are people in this country, I'm not saying, I'm going to say they don't read enough, not dumb enough, they're not dumb, they probably have a lot of money, they're probably real smart, for to say, I don't like really Google or Amazon or I can't stand Facebook, but oh, by the way, I'm putting $1 million in the QQQs today. Hopefully you understand that 40% of your, 45% of your money is going into those five stocks.
I mean, right.
I mean, hopefully there isn't anybody who's got $1 million to throw around that can't figure that out. But I think there's a lot. So we're almost reaching a point, I think, Carl, where the stocks go up, people have borrowing power in their account, they borrow money from the clearing firm, they buy some more money, buy some more stocks. And I think there's almost, because of the amount of cash we're throwing in the system, we almost have a shortage of stocks. The same way in 2007 we had a shortage of mortgage bonds, and companies were actually making synthetic portfolios because the demand for the mortgages was like 30 times higher than there were mortgages. I think we're almost going down that same road here. Or am I wrong?
Well, yeah, I think we are, and it's one of the things that's really complicated in terms of like figuring out, okay, you know, where do you go next, right? Because yesterday's in the mirror. It doesn't matter. It's one of the things about being successful as a trader or anything else that requires that you look at today, and that is, you know, whether you won or lost yesterday is irrelevant to tomorrow. I guess it has nothing to do with it. One of the keys with trading in general is that you have to wake up, look at your board every day, what you hold, and say, all right, would I buy it at this price? And if the answer is no, you sell it. And it's because you know, whether you were right or wrong yesterday has no bearing on whether or not you're going to be right or wrong today.
Well, it makes it much more difficult for me. I have protected stuff for everybody, and basically,
right.
You know, I feel like I haven't had a car accident in a long time, knock on wood. I mean, I feel like I pissed away my insurance money for the last 20 years. I feel like I'm pissing away money on puts for people. Because this market, you know, the Fed never wants it to go down. Now, I know that based on my experience that one of these days that's going to be something that we go after these guys with pitchforks. But I also know it might be, you know, God knows how many years from now. But the thing I wish, you know, maybe you could tell me, you're closest to this the most. Somewhere down where the rubber meets the road, it's real easy for a client to say, well, gee, you should have been in the queues the last 6 months, even though the 6 months before that you didn't want to be in the queues. The QQQs, which is the high tech stuff. I mean, you did.
Right.
So you wanted to be. It's quite another for me to take somebody's $2 million they drop on me and invest them in the queues today. They're two totally separate. I can't trade the last 6 months, and a lot of clients think that either I should be or they could be or something. You can't do that. I have to trade the next 6 months, right?
Well, that's kind of the point that I was making.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, you know, regardless of what your horizon is, what you have to do every day is wake up and do what you think is going to be the right thing to do for tomorrow.
Well,
whether you were right or wrong the last time, and so you know, everybody, it's very easy to look at anything retrospectively and say, well, you know, if you'd done this, well, you know, yeah, I mean, I can just run a quick scan and I can find, you know, some stock that was up 50% yesterday and say, well, you know, you idiot, you didn't buy that yesterday.
Well, then you'll get all of that. I mean, if the phone rings, it's what you get all the time. I mean, for me,
I know, but I'm saying, you know,
yeah.
but there's nothing productive in doing that. And if you allow yourself to get wound up in that, you're going to chase things that ultimately are going to lose you money.
Well, yeah, and but my question, Carl, is I'm bringing this back to, like, if you were on the Fed board or something. I mean, we got a guy who's saying, I'm gonna do $120 billion a month.
Right.
All right, which most of us who have had some kind of monetary theory training would say, wait a minute. You can't be telling me things are good in one day and then saying the next day you're buying bonds at ridiculously high prices with essentially our money. But what is the mechanism? I mean, if you look at the chart last week, what is the mechanism? And I don't think just the, well, back in my day, it was the New York Fed that would do this at normal time. Well, they would do it, what, on Monday and Wednesday morning? Isn't that, or am I going back way too far? We sort of knew when the Fed was active, and it was always between, what, 10 and 12 in the morning. And, you know, there was a way to sort of keep track of these guys. Now, you know, not that they were, you know, that they're bad people or anything. I'm saying that there was, if you wanted to pay attention, you could, right, Carl? I mean, is that fair? But now what possesses and what is the mechanism for a week like last week where if you look at the graph of their balance sheet, you look at the last 8 weeks and you go, hey, what the hell is that? I mean, they were $125 billion last week. Now, I don't think it's the guy in New York, the bureaucratic rumdum who actually, or whatever, he's probably a great guy or a lady. There's no way that person made a $90 billion mistake. And oops, I just happened to buy $90 billion or $120 billion this week instead of the $30 I'm supposed to, or the $30 they're telling people. How does that even happen, Carl? And secondly, who would have engineered it and why? I mean, what would possess Powell or somebody to say, hey, this week we're going to do four times the normal amount? Is it because he's going in front of Congress and doesn't want the market collapsing while he's there? Is it something that stupid or that vain, or is it a mistake, or is it just difficult to maintain the number evenly? Or I honestly don't know. I've never been on at that level of the detail on how you actually do it, but it seems to me to be a big miss if it was a miss.
I don't buy that's a miss. My suspicion is that is exactly what he was concerned about, is that he didn't want to be sitting in a chair when there's a 1,500 point down day on the Dow.
Well, boy, I'm not so sure that Congress ever gave anybody that kind of power.
You know what? Yes, they did. And let me point out that I've raised this point many times, that the Federal Reserve is an animal that was created by Congress through the Federal Reserve Act. It is forbidden by law from buying anything that is not backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. That is explicitly in that law. The exception is what are called revenue, and it's a very narrow one, is this thing called revenue anticipation notes that the states issue. It's basically a short-term debt instrument in anticipation of collecting taxes. Okay? It's the only exception. And yet, during the 2008 blow-up, they went out and they bought Fannie and Freddie paper that had stamped on the front of every single prospectus, this is not a guaranteed security from the federal government. It is a instrument guaranteed only by the solvency and balance sheets of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That was a clear violation of the law. It was not a close call. How many people went to jail for that?
Well, okay. Let's kind of review that for a second, because In my travels through, various educational institutions, it was always the Fannie Freddie stuff, Carl, was always kind of a wink wink. Everybody knew that it was not technically guaranteed by the U.S. government, but everybody always thought it sort of was. And
Well, by the way, Chief, don't get me wrong. What happened after that was the most astounding of all. The federal government stood up, and actual Congress actually stood up and did guarantee it.
But they really didn't, because the banks.
No, but they sort of did. But the thing is this: they did it retroactively. Point being, what the Fed did at the time was illegal.
Okay, well, explain to me this. Maybe you're the first person to answer this question. How? In this country, from what as I'm going to areas I'm not a federal banking expert, that's what I got you for. Unlike in Japan and in Germany, I don't know about the rest of Europe, stock in companies is not good capital for a bank.
Correct. Right?
But in Japan and Europe, that's why you always be real careful when you talk about these banks, because when the market goes down, they lose capital, and it's a bizarre thing. So that's a good thing here. How exactly, if Fannie and Freddie were not guaranteed at all, explicitly or implicitly, even though everybody gave it the wink look, whatever that is, how exactly were Fannie and Freddie preferreds considered good capital? And yet they weren't. Well, they ended up losing money on those things.
Well, I understand that. But here's the point, okay? There are multiple things that the Fed does every single day. All right, the Federal Reserve Act, remember, Congress can modify it any time they'd like. They have. There used to be a two-prong test for the Federal Reserve to target against. They turned around after the 1970s, 1980s fiasco and made it a three-prong test. Okay? So it has been modified in the past. It can be modified again. One of the prongs is stable prices. Now, that is an aspirational goal. It is not stated as it says the Federal Reserve shall maintain monetary and credit aggregates so as to promote blah. Okay? So in other words, it doesn't say do it or go to prison. All right, if you fail, you go to prison. It doesn't say that. But to stand up in front of Congress for the last how many decades and say we are deliberately not going to do this, we're deliberately targeting 2% inflation, is a direct intentional violation of the law.
I don't disagree.
Okay, so guess what? Whose fault is this? It's yours and mine, because we are the people who put the 535 butt clowns in Congress that then turn around and let them do this. And not just today, but they've let them do this over a space of 100 years.
Charlie, I have no idea what you're talking about. People in there, I mean, there might be 20 or 30 that do, but the rest of them don't.
Well, I understand, but you know what? This is, you look at all the things, everybody loves to blame the Fed for this. All right? You know, wow, the Fed is causing inflation. The Fed is doing this wrong. The Fed is doing it. The Fed does absolutely nothing that they're not authorized to do by Congress.
Well, but there's different definitions of that. I mean, there's people that will take the definition all over the place. I mean, Milton Friedman, after, you know, writing the monetary history of the United States and realizing, I mean, first of all, it's enough to put you to sleep in about a minute, but it is an absolutely fascinating book, Carl. I don't know if you ever saw it, you probably have. The charts on the thing for like 1927, where those people got that kind of data and where they were able to put this stuff together and the terms that were used. I mean, it wasn't considered M1 in those days. It was hot money.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you want to read the thing properly, every day, every page is like several hours of research, right? Whatever, there's charts and stuff, you got to go through. If you went through them all, it would take months to read the book. Now, who the hell would want to do that about money? But not me. I read bits and pieces of it when I'm totally bored. But his idea was, at the end of the day, what the Fed should be doing is, which is not easy, by the way, is to maintain money supply growth slightly above the optimum growth rate of the economy. So in other words,
right.
if the best you can do on a real basis is 2.5-3% a year, which is really good, by the way, for a mature economy, that you should grow the money supply 3.5-4%. And then if you had a 0.5% inflation in there, it's not so bad. But he says that's like the full-time job. He says, but if you decide, oh man, things are a little slow, we're going to pile money in, oops, we did too many, we got to pull money out, because once you get in that trick bag, you never come out of it.
Because, yeah, but you know what? They are in that trick bag, Chief, because
they are now at some point. Yeah, I agree.
Well, no, they were. Look, on the day of when Bernanke showed up in front of Congress and testified that he was adding liquidity to the market into the maw of the crash. All right, he testified to this under oath. On that day, Geithner, at his direction, because, of course, we all know that's the New York Fed, right? He got rewarded with a Treasury Secretary job for doing this, by the way. He pulled $60 billion out that morning.
Well, can anybody figure out why he did that?
No, but you know what? He factually lied to Congress about what he was doing. I sent a fax to every single one of the 535 people sitting in those rooms and proved it, because this was in the OMO report, what used to be called the Slosh Report, came out every morning about 11 o'clock. And it was one of the things that I watched like a hawk, because it was a very good indication for what was going to happen in the market in the afternoon. And I was doing a lot of short-term trading at the time, and it was a fantastic indicator. It wasn't always right. Nothing ever is. But 80% of the time, if you saw a build into the banking system in that report, the market was going to go up that afternoon.
Well, money has to go somewhere.
Well, I'm just saying. It's like, there's an excess of gasoline. Let's go burn some in our boat today, okay?
Yeah.
It was one of those kinds of things. And so I used to watch it every single day. And I'm sitting there watching him testify. I've got CNBC on. I'm watching his testimony. He said, we're adding this because, the market is crashing. Lehman just blew up. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm looking at this report going, you're a lying sack of you-know-what. You took $60 billion out today.
Well, when I was in high school, I don't know why I remember this kind of stuff, but there was some law that was being passed, and we were just discussing this. This is like freshman year. And the brother Copper was from New York, and he was a bright guy. And somebody says, well, that law is not going to make any difference because nobody's going to, it must have been like a traffic law. Nobody's going to pull anybody over for that anyway. And the brother says, what you said is actually very dangerous. The promise of non-enforcement or selective enforcement of a law is never a good reason for a law.
Right.
But what you're at the point now where you're mentioning, we have how many bazillion laws in this country, and people can select whatever they feel like and go after people. I mean, I was absolutely zero fan of Trump and his cronies, but the idea that people are now pulling laws off the shelf and going after the guy. Come on. If those laws, they probably shouldn't even be there, or if they're going to be applied to everybody, we're going to have an awful lot of people that probably should be in jail, and it won't just be on one side of the aisle. I mean, if we're going to actually look at somebody who got paid to put something in a bill or something, or any of these bills that are coming out, I mean, how many people do we have left in Congress? 12? I mean, how many honest people do we have there? George Washington. So is it under 10? I hope not. Is it under 100? Probably. I mean, that have never taken a dime to put something in a bill? I mean, how many people do we even have like that?
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, it's just, it's insane when you look at what's going on right now within all levels. And the problem with doing the kinds of things that we've done over the last 20 or 30 years, if you want to look at this, I'm sure this goes well back before the 2000 blow up, but that's when I started paying a lot of really close attention to it. It was in the 1990s because I was running a company. I mean, that's what I had to do. I wasn't a wage slave anymore. I was responsible for other people. And as I start looking at this, and I say, hey, wait a minute, this is becoming exponentially more stupid, because you're doing something that's dumb, but what you're doing distorts things. Now you have to double down on it, because otherwise it's going to unwind, and when it does, it's going to hurt. And so we'll do the same thing. Well, just look at where we are now. We put $6 trillion worth of dilution into the U.S. economy over the last 18 months.
Well, but we're reaching a point now where everybody thinks that they can pass a bill with $1 trillion in there, and the money disappears out of nowhere. The thought of
here's something that just showed up on my feed this morning. There's another proposal that's making its way around, being muttered about in Capitol Hill. Okay, and that is this: those people who have government guaranteed mortgages, FHA, VA, basically stuff that Ginnie securitizes, right?
Yep.
Okay. They now want to give those people payment abatements and essentially forgive part of what they should have paid but in arrears on, in certain cases, retroactively because of what happened with COVID. Now, think about what happens if they do this. So now, why would you, as a person who doesn't get one of these things, who doesn't get one of these handouts. Why would you go and effort to your maximum to do the best that you can do when you're not going to get any benefit from it? They're going to steal that tax money from you to dilute your interest by raising prices again and give it to somebody who literally sat at home and smoked bong hits for the last 8 months.
Well, there's a level, Carla, what, you know, you and I talk about this. There's always been, I people tell me, there's always been, you know, people have always been people. There's always been a little, there's been a guy, you know, great-grandfather, Carl Denninger, who was making PT boat engines, probably found a way to scam 5% out of the government.
Right.
And by the way, he lived in Buffalo or someplace, and, by the way, Buffalo is where they made the PT boat engines. And, it didn't matter when he went to the local bar, you know, he bought everybody around and the money stayed there, and basically the 5% he, quote, stole got spread around to other people to the point where, you know, it almost didn't matter, right? I mean, it's not perfectly honest, but it's within the, we can deal with it sort of range. But now this looks like it's, the numbers that are being taken are numbers that nobody believes can ever be paid back, to the point where you wonder if the people even think they're going to be in this country 5 years from now, or whether they've already got their massive boat in the Eastern Mediterranean. Of course, Greece is going under too, so I don't know if that's helping you out. But I'm saying it's almost like we're almost at escape velocity. I mean, if we start giving that kind of money to people, there's no way in hell. I mean, Joe Biden and whoever one of these dum-dums can get up there. When I say dum-dums, they're not dumb. They have a huge skill set, but and can tell the rest of us, don't worry, we're gonna pay off everybody's mortgage, and oh, by the way, we're gonna raise the taxes on rich people from 21% to 25%.
Right.
We're gonna put a 2-cent tax on stock transactions, and we'll be even. Well, come on. I mean, if anybody thinks that math adds up, I mean, you gotta go to the, who's the guy from, Bernie kept running. We're gonna pay off all student debt, but oh, by the way, we're gonna get it off stock transactions in a week. I mean, Bernie, really? I own a brokerage firm. I know there's not that much money there. But these guys, they're not that stupid, Carl. They must know that these numbers don't add up. They must know that they can't.
Well, they do know, because, and you know, just like in the context of healthcare, as I think I've related on the show before, and I have in my column, about 10 years ago, I was privileged to have an invitation to go speak to some Senate staffers. And we filed into a room, and we were supposed to get 10 minutes. We ended up getting almost 20, which is almost never happens. I mean, you obviously get somebody's attention if they hold it over, right? And I pointed out what was going on with Medicare and Medicaid, CMS, and said, you know, look, this is going to eat the budget. Here's the numbers. Here's the math. Here's the sequence. This needs to be addressed, because it's going to eat the government if it isn't, and ultimately it will eat all of us. And there was this silence around the table. People looked at the graphs, looked at the numbers, and then one of them finally kind of slowly said, yeah, we all know this. And I said, okay, why hasn't it been addressed and why won't it be? And they said, well, because there's an election in 2 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And so basically they know it's going to blow up in everyone's face, and they're not going to do it, and they're fully aware of what's going to happen.
We got to head off the break here. We'll continue. SP Futures down up 21 now. NASDAQ is up 57. Again, big moves in Snapchat. It's up $11. It's trading 74, so it's up, well, it's pushing 20%. And I think they might have broke into the one penny column. We got Twitter up. We got a bunch of them up. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 online on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone Rock Based Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. I don't know if anybody watched yesterday or listened. U.S. home prices, median price, $350,000, now up 24% in 1 year. 1 year! That's, I don't think that's anybody's definition of transitory, man. Just saying. S&P Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 20, up 54, Dow Futures up 199, we're just over 200, so I guess we'll be over 200 today, at least for a while. Over in Europe, we've got, oh, by the way, I do have, Snapchat is up, almost $11 at 73.82, and let me see what I got for Twitter. I've got, I'm sorry, Twitter is up, 338 to 72.95, so these guys have had a couple of, really nasty earnings misses, but not this time. They got a beat and they're up. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 155, that's a full 1%, FTSE up 54.8%. Back around up 72.1%. By the way, this is going to get us back into our Friday rally motif. We were that way for a while until we had a couple of clunkers, but now we're back on the program. Nikkei up 159.6%, Shanghai down 24.7%, Hang Seng down 401, 1.45%. Again, this is China going after not just their tech people, but they're going after their educational people, saying that you can't just go sell shares over here in the U.S. And we're dying to buy this stuff. We don't even know what it is, but we're dying to buy it. Yesterday, again, we had Dow was up 25, the S&P was up 8, NASDAQ was up 52. Bonds, positive 3 basis points, 1.29 in the 10-year. The Bund, positive 1 basis point, it's only negative 0.40 today, as opposed to negative 0.41. Japan, positive 0.01. We've got oil down 11 cents at 71.80. Brent down 14 cents. Very quiet in the oil patch. 73.65. Natural gas down a penny. Just ducking under $4, 3.99. Our Bob is unchanged at 227. We've got gold down $8 now at, was down 10. 17.96. Still can't even really fight its way over 1800, much less 1900 or 2000. Silver, down 14 cents, 25.24. Copper up 4 cents, 4.38. And we've got our favorite Bitcoin is up $33, 32,371. Hey, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're still off to a pretty decent start here on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, but for whatever reason, the Stevenson has had a couple of crashes earlier this morning, and there's a new one now on the outbound side.
way out west, just before Naperville Road, that's blocking the right lane as you're heading south on I-55. Inbound crashes that happened earlier near Harlem are all clear. Traffic starting to build steadily on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower. Southside expressways are looking good, as is Lakeshore Drive. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to warm up a bit today and this weekend, as we'll be in the upper 80s and low 90s throughout the weekend. Today, partly cloudy skies with a high of 87. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 78 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast, but milder temperatures, a high of just 88, but rain on and off throughout the day. Right now it's rainy and 76 degrees down in Phoenix. In sports, Cubs dropped 3-4 to the Cardinals, losing in St. Louis 3-2 yesterday. They're back in town this afternoon against the Diamondbacks, who were off last night. So Cubs will host the Diamondbacks at 1:20 this afternoon, Chicago time, first pitch at Wrigley. White Sox were off last night as well. They're up in Milwaukee tonight to take on the Brewers. That's a 7:10 Central Time first pitch. Chief.
Carl, what'd you think of those at home prices?
You know, there's a funny you ask that. There's a house that before I bought this one I looked at was on top of a ridge. Nice place, but it looked like somebody had bought it. They were going to finish part of it. They bought it basically, 80% complete. The top was not, it was an attic, right? That's what it started as. They were going to finish that off. They ran out of money. And I had some questions about whether or not there was a foundation problem with it when I looked at it. And I wasn't willing to make the investment to have the structural guys come out and, and tell me, okay, is this what I think it is, or is it no big deal? So I passed on it. Well, it's back on the market at double what I would have had to pay for it, and that was a year and a half ago.
Cool.
And if you're the guy who managed to buy it, hold it for a year. And by the way, they've done nothing to the interior of it because the pictures are up, and it's the same house that I looked at in 2019.
That's what I was going to ask. Did they do anything with the attic? And it sounds like no.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, the photographs are exactly identical. I looked at the listing. I'm like, oh, I know that place, and because I kind of keep my nose down on what's going on in different markets, especially around the local area. That one, I was like, oh, that house. Yeah, I know that house. I walked through it. I looked at it. They did absolutely nothing to it in terms of improvements over the last 18 months, and it's back on the market asking double what it was asking and sold for, by the way. I mean, it sold at very close to, what it was asking before. So, yeah, I mean, am I surprised by that number? No. But, did you notice the owner's equivalent rent number is only up like 4 or 5%, right?
Yeah.
Right, which, by the way, is the biggest fraud in the CPI index, and I've railed about this for years. And it is, everyone says, oh, hedonic adjustment, oh, it's just a lie, the CPI. No, the CPI measures what it measures. The problem is they intentionally lie about impact because, and they did it, the reason they did it is to essentially capitalize on falling interest rates by depressing the reported CPI.
Well, how does that? How's
that's
that
the reason it was done, Chief.
How is that? But how is that any different than? If you and I, certainly since you used to run a firm and I still do, if you were to look at the medical costs, it's really very simple. How much did Carl Inc. and how much does PTI have to pay for somebody's insurance policy that works here?
Right.
And if it's up three times in the last 20 years, it's up three times. Well, these guys split it up so much to where, oh, no, actually an appendectomy from, those years because Blue Cross, bought a hospital system, or I don't know if they did or not, that the appendectomy, the things we look at, the cost of a stitch or an appendectomy or a tonsillectomy or something that we zero in on has only gone up 10% in 20 years. It's somehow, that's our basket or some kind of crap like that. When obviously they're ignoring the fact that, wait a minute, it's up three times, you idiots. They're going to zero in on something. It's not going to be the new Nike shoes. It's going to be, you know, the Maddie Weber's old Nehru jacket. Well, Nehru jackets aren't up at all, yeah, because that's because nobody wants them. You know, but the new Nike basketball shoes used to be, whatever, $80. Now they're $200. I mean,
right.
I mean, it's all about what you look at. And if your message is that there isn't any inflation, well, then there isn't. Right.
Right. And that's the thing is, I mean, I look at that, I have, for years, I've said, look, the entire point of doing OER as opposed to house prices in the CPI, even though a very substantial percentage of Americans allegedly own a house. Okay. And I say allegedly because go ahead and try not paying your property taxes and see who ends up owning it within a couple of years. But a very large percentage of Americans, at least have the myth that they own their residence. And yet we don't look at the actual price of residences in the CPI. We look at this thing called OER, and the way that works mechanistically is that as interest rates go down, OER is deflationary. Well, and so we deliberately claim that house price increases are not happening when they are.
Well, I think there is a certain logic to it, because I bought, I think when I bought my place in Beverly, I'm going to say, I think my mortgage was 10.5, something like that, and then
yeah.
It came racketing right down. Well, clearly, from my standpoint, Carl, the amount of the housing cost really is the amount it costs you to get in there per month. I mean, so I'm not all that upset with the, you know, owner's equivalent rent, because I think if people looked at it in such a way, upset the way with the way they're doing it. Don't let me rephrase. But in theory, if my mortgage costs me $4,000 a month, it almost doesn't make any difference to me whether my interest rate's 2% and I paid $400,000, or if it's 5% and I made $300,000 in terms of monthly number. However, it makes a massive difference, really. Right, because that's what people who are buying homes now, first thing I will say is, who are you going to sell it to? What are you talking
right.
about? Because, well, the average home, I don't know if this has gone up or not, but people not moving as much. Didn't the average person live in a house 5 years, something like that? Is it 5.5 or 4.8? It's somewhere around 5, and it has been pretty much my whole lifetime. You know,
the reason that mortgages are based off the 10-year and not the 30 is because they typically prepay out in 7.
All right, so 5 to 7. Let's say 7.
Yeah.
It sort of doesn't matter. But there have been times when it's been like 5.
Right.
You know, so because, you know, there's a lot of movement in the economy and something, whatever. So the idea is if you pay $400 for the place, you're getting a 2% mortgage. So you're paying, I don't even know, the order you pay off the top of your head, but say $4,000 a month. Okay, well now if the rate is 6%, and oh, by the way, the taxes have now doubled because you've moved into a place that's broke, or pretty much everybody's broke, but to varying degrees. So now all of a sudden it's 5 years from now, and you're going to sell it to somebody who also can afford, not 4,000, but economy's gotten somewhat better. He can afford 5. But oh, by the way, his taxes are up 600. Well, there's 600 of the 1,000 right there. And the interest rates are now 5%, which is, you know, more normal, shall we say, historically normal than 2. Well,
right.
now the most he can pay for your check to get him to the 5,000 he can pay instead of the 4,000 that you paid is going to be 310, which is probably very close. And now, basically, you're up Bleeps Creek without a paddle, right? Because the 90,000 difference to him doesn't make any difference, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And that's, you know, what I've pointed out to people many times, and nobody, of course, in the real estate industry loves this. They always get very, very squirrely when I bring this up. Yeah, I have one of those nice HP 12Cs sitting on my desk. And the nice thing about the 12C is that it does amortization schedules. Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that if you put in the payment and the interest rate and the number of payments, it will tell you what the principal was that you financed.
Right.
So you can take today's prices and say, okay, you know, my P&I is $1,600, right? And then you can say, okay, what does that do to the value of my house if interest rates go to 6%?
I'm going to say it's down by a factor. It's got to be around like 40%.
Yeah, it goes down a lot. right, and so, you know, I can give you the imputed value, assuming that a person who is buying can pay what you're paying per month in P&I.
Well, the taxes make just as big of a hit too, and nobody takes that into account.
Well, yeah, and that's you know, I watched this happen with my parents' home, where all of the nominal appreciation over the space of 50 destroyed by that.
Well, sure.
And that's not included. That's not adjusted for inflation. That's nominal price.
Well, you also find in some areas, and Maddie knows what I'm talking about. I mean, Audrey's been selling some. Well, she hasn't recently, but she sold a few condos right in a row in this area. Now, this is right before all these prices started to shoot up. This is more than a year ago, so people are probably pissed that they. But when you have condos, I mean, you can always put up more condos, right? It's not like you've got 4 acres on top of a hill and there's only one hill. I mean, you can put up condos pretty much anywhere. And what these people was interesting, Carl, and there's all kinds of other phenomenons, is they were buying these homes at, like, say, 200. And they're putting down, you know, say 20%, so you're putting down 40 grand. And over a period of 10 years, they lived there. And, you know, it wasn't like they didn't vacuum or they didn't wash anything. I mean, basically, at the end of 10 years, they had not updated anything. And they went in there when it was new. So now the kitchen, it needs work just to get it back to the shape it was in when you got there. We're not talking about new kinds of tiles or better appliances or anything. Same way with the bathrooms and the wood floors. I mean, everything just needs, you know, 20 grand of work just to get it back to where you were. So the places are now worth, you know, 175 or something. And everybody's like, man, I lost 200 grand. Well, you didn't really lose 200 grand. You kind of used
you consumed 200
yeah, you
grand.
Yeah, you consumed,
right.
Well, you consumed 25 or 30 grand. You just didn't make any dough on it. You're basically break even. Because, I mean, you know, because there's a certain amount of maintenance that you didn't do. But maintenance in houses is not necessarily, if you look at like what I have, you know, the place that I manage, you know, it's a four apartment old place. So you can look at, management is not a step function, Carl. You can spend whatever you want every month, right? It's still not get to the end of the trail. But if you have a regular house, pretty much after 20 years, you need to redo the kitchen unless you're, you know, like my mother, where God help you if there was a slice in the countertop, you know. But at some point, you still want to replace the countertop, even though it's perfect, right? We didn't do any of that stuff. Boy, there was no fingerprints on the wall, no slices in the countertop. Does that mean my mother was a Nazi or what?
Yeah, maybe.
the thought of cutting on a countertop without having a plate between you and the countertop. I can't imagine anybody doing that in my place.
Well, if you got stone, all that's going to do is dull your knife, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, just the care of not making sure in those days they were all formica.
Right.
And you could cut the formica, right? Nobody had a stone countertop in a bungalow, for God's sake.
Absolutely,
I mean, it was all formica, and that was big deal, having formica, right? I mean, in those days. Anyway, what I'm saying is I wonder, you know, because Kevin and I always banter back and forth about, you know, the purpose of education. And everybody doesn't have to go to Notre Dame or Northwestern or Tennessee or wherever it is. I get that part. But somehow or another, the basic stuff we're talking about, how your money works, Audrey takes people around that have real jobs. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, a pizza delivery guy, not there's anything wrong with that. People that have, they're essentially executive jobs that are still cash and checks and currency exchanges.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a base education here that somehow or another we are not anxious to give to people. I don't see why, if somebody's an electrician, he shouldn't know some of the basics of economics and money supply, some of the basics of sociology, and, oh, by the way, know how to read and write. Why shouldn't he, or he or she? What are we missing here?
Because we don't consider that to be a gating function anymore. I mean, as I've related before, when I was running MCS in Chicago, you know, my employment base was, of course, the people who live in Chicago, right? I mean, that's, you know, it's most of the people down at Prudential Plaza, if you had a brain in your head, you took the train or, you know, in or whatever, because you'd be crazy to be paying what they wanted to park. So, okay, fine. I would have people come in that were students at U of C. Okay, we're talking about college students now, all right, that have graduated. They've been accepted, and they are actual students that could not do four-function arithmetic on a piece of paper and pencil.
When you say four-function, add, subtract, multiply, and divide?
Correct.
I never heard it referred to as that, but I guess that would be how you do that.
I'm talking about people that literally could not, and the whole reason I wanted to know this is that we occasionally had somebody that, you know, didn't pay their bill, their service was off, they came in, we had a pay cash drawer, and they're like, you know, they had a $20 bill, they want to pay the bill, get turned back on. Well, we didn't have a computer cash register at the front desk. You had to be able to make change for the guy that walked in the door and wanted to pay you.
Yeah, well, making change is a lost art.
Well, seriously, they couldn't sit there and take, you know, two columns of numbers and add them up.
I would agree. Hey, Carl, I'm going to transfer. We have a few minutes left, and really, why a lot of people listen to finance shows, which we are at least most of the time, some of the time are. What people really want to know is what stocks to buy, and they only go up. You're never wrong. But really, what I would like to know, I don't think I'm alone. After doing this twice now in 1982 and seeing things fly up, and then 1987 seeing them go the other way, and a few other times go the other way. How exactly do you and I, and by our, you know, the people we talk to on the show and my clients, how exactly does every single time the market drops even a hair, I charge in and buy the dip, because that does seem to be the way you make money these days. How can I do that 30 times in a row, and the one day that it's not going to come back up, I somehow smell a rat or something's different and I don't buy? I mean, how do you do that? Because that's obviously that's what I want to know. Because, you know, I didn't buy Monday night. Well, I rolled puts down. So technically, as if you put a light to my face, I did buy because we rolled puts down. We got longer, but not many people understands what that means. I never lost my protection, but I did get longer. Okay, so if I was one of the bumps on TV, I'd say, sure, I was a buyer on Monday night. It's not the same as me taking $1 million of somebody's money and saying, by the way, this is the time, let's just get in here and buy without any protection whatsoever. So I'll split hairs on this and be truthful, although I don't think too many people are. But how exactly am I going to know that it's different this time? I mean, I was long from 1980 to, you know, July of, and I was a little long when the market rallied in 1982, Carl, but I didn't have as much money as I did when I started, so because I had been kind of long all the way, and I never went anywhere. I mean, even looking back today, other than a couple of guys coming out that morning and saying, you know, now interest rates could go down, how would I have known? Even in retrospect, I can't figure out what the signal would have been a week early, where I would have said,
you won't be able to. The one thing that I saw in 2007, in the spring, there was a huge dump in Asia overnight that did not have an apparent cause, and that's what started my digging into what was going on underneath the surface. And when I uncovered what the banks were doing with paying dividends and literally, in the case of WaMu, dividends out of money they didn't have, that's when I threw a flag on the play and said, okay, I don't know when this is going to blow up, but it's going to. And it's been a very nice run. I've been long a lot of stuff for a very long time coming out of the 2000 crash. And it is time to take that money and put it in the bank and start thinking about when it rolls over, what I'd like to short.
How long was the time before you spotted that and it actually happened?
Almost a year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Every time I've felt that way, it's been about a year.
and the thing is, the same thing happened in 1999. I sold my internet company, and then I watched everybody laugh at me for a year, right?
Well, how much of the
you stupid bum, look at all the money I'm making. Well, yeah. You know, how'd that work out, in March of 2000, right?
Well, still, it would have been better if you'd have hung in there all 99.
Only if I got out in time, though. See, that's the problem.
Well, you know what, I didn't. Even being somebody from the monitor school, we only got like 30 seconds. Let's talk about this a little bit next week. I didn't realize how much late gas, for lack of a better term, the Fed was going to put on that with the money they poured in for Y2K.
Oh, and a crazy amount, and it's happening now.
It's happening now.
Same thing.
Same thing.
Yep.
But I don't think this is as imminent as that was. Maybe it is. I don't know. Carl, thank you very much, buddy. Have a good weekend. S&P futures up 18. NASDAQ futures up 45. I'll be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.